Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my co-host and longtime friend from work, Kyle Schoenewill. And what a week and weekend we're about to have here that we're kicking off with this She-Hulk review episode. I'm feeling great today. A lot of good things happening in the world today.
I'm feeling great today as well. Do you know what happened for me last night?
I don't.
Here we go. I officially started the 2022 rewatch of the entire MCU.
Wow.
So it's begun. Captain America, the first Avenger, last night.
Wow.
And here's what I want to say about it, Robbie. I'm excited about this. First of all, I'm trying to make this the most intentional rewatch of all the content ever. Like, all the lights were off. I made popcorn, had my Diet Coke, surround sound going, like trying not to be on my computer or walking around. You know what I mean? Like, this was intentional, first of all. And the second thing I'm experimenting with is I have now started two brand new fresh notes on my phone. And all they are new rankings that I'm going to try to give each movie like a critical review.
Uh-huh.
And then the preference review. And here's how I'm doing it. I'm excited about this. I am not starting with any current working list. I'm just starting with Captain America with no number by it or anything. It's just Captain America. And then I'm going to watch Iron Man. I'm going to decide, do I prefer Iron Man more than Captain America? And do I think critically it's better or worse than Captain America? And I'm gonna try to make two lists that way. Oh boy.
Wow. I like that. Okay, I've thought about trying to do something like this, and that feels like a very sound method. I like this.
Right. Like, instead of taking a preconceived notion of, oh, Captain America is ranked 20th or whatever it is, you know, I'm gonna be like, okay, I saw it. Did I enjoy it as a critic? How much do I prefer watching this movie? And then I'm just going to compare it to the next one and the next one and the next one until I have a list and see how close that is to what I had. But I'm trying to go like full blown clean slate in every way. I'm excited.
Wow.
There you go.
Love that. I'm just trying to figure out a way to work in a phase four rewatch this year in time for a Hawkeye watch around the holidays again. I've been thinking that's one that I really need to view again. A couple of the later Disney Plus shows, I just feel like I need to give some more time to. And I've been lately just, I think I've been listening to the Journey Through the MCU playlist. And when I happen upon those Christoph Beck Hawkeye tracks, I'm like, ah, yeah, I want to watch this, which has just got me thinking maybe I'll try to do a full rewatch, because we have moved the watch order around some in a way that's excited me. But at the least, I'm going to do a phase four.
When I get to phase four, I will consult with you to make sure I'm doing exactly what you want me to try for all those new things.
Yeah, I'm really excited to try it myself, because I do think, and we'll talk about this at some point, but I think we're going to officially lock in the Phase 4 rewatch at the end of this year. Now, of course, you know, like with Black Widow, there's always a chance that something finds its way back there. But I think that that's not super likely. And I'm liking the way things are shaping up. But I think that that'll be a conversation for a future date.
One other detail I'm excited about. I had this idea last night, and I haven't presented it to you until now. But first of all, I was watching it in my Friends from Work Thor Love and Thunder t-shirt, and I mowed the lawn in my Friends from Work tank top. And I thought to myself, I need to see everyone in their tanks.
Oh, yeah.
Like, send us pictures of your suns out, guns out, or suns out, what, friends out. I don't know. Send your pictures of you in your new shirts, because I love it and I want to see them, and we'll post those. But secondly, I was watching Captain America last night, and there was a really, really deep cut line, and I turned to Annika and said, that would make a really fun trivia question. And here's my idea. Every movie, as I go through it, I'm going to come up with one trivia question, and the first person to message me the answer to this will get a original Friends from Work t-shirt in the mail.
Ooh, okay. Yep, I like this too. You're firing on all cylinders today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So just here's the question. And just guys, obviously you can cheat, okay? But be on the honor system. It would be really fun to try this without cheating. So don't Google this. Pretend you're playing trivia at a real bar and you have to put your phone away. Here we go. Office style trivia. This is my question. And I want to know if you know the answer. One of the characters in the movie says, "Wonderful weather we're having this morning." To which another character responds in code. What does that character say? What is the code response to that question?
Oh, yeah, I know that.
You do?
I
don't say it. Don't say it.
Okay. Say it.
It's kind of fun, though, right? I thought that's a great trivia question.
Yeah, that is a good trivia question. I like that style, because that's like a, you probably would have had to have seen that movie maybe not the amount of times that I've seen it, but at least several,
right,
for that to stick.
It's
into
deep
your mind.
Cut, but not so deep, you know?
Yep. I like it.
So anyways, first person to answer that will get a free t-shirt.
Okay. Briefly, before we dive into the meat of this thing, couple of fun things happening over here. One, I got my Friends from Work Love and Thunder shirts in the mail and was rocking it last night. And look, obviously, okay, we're biased, but I also feel like in this respect, we're not biased, because I am very OCD about this sort of thing. And if anything, I would be more critical of the quality of our own shirts, right? Because I want them so badly to be great. But we have really lucked out with the quality of the t-shirts and hoodies that we've gotten so far. And these are every bit as great as what I've come to expect. They look good.
Let's
they feel
go.
Good. I'm loving it. I feel bad because I think we're pretty much sold out or on the verge of being sold out. So I'm plugging something that people can no longer really get their hands on. But let it be a lesson to you, listener. Let it be a lesson. Next time.
Take that. P.S. I think there are less than 10. So if your size happens to be there, I'll still ship it.
Yeah, hit us up. Okay, another thing. So this coming weekend, and I have a lot of mixed emotions about this. People know I always kind of feel that way going into anticipated premieres. People also know that I am a mega, mega Tolkien fan and have been for a long time. And I've been kind of anxiously curious about this new Amazon series that is premiering on Friday. And the reviews that have come out. It's this Friday.
Wow.
Yeah. And the reviews are actually just making me more curious, because there were elements of those trailers that made me a little bit nervous. And there were elements of things I had heard about the process and about the plans, and just the fact that the show has been greenlit in advance for 5 seasons. It felt like a really big swing. But a lot of the reviews that I'm seeing are making me kind of optimistic. I saw a couple that were not great, but I saw a lot that were saying essentially, yeah, it's kind of slow, which it's like, hey, it's Tolkien, so that checks out. But it's really beautiful visually, which is exciting to me. So critics say, I have not seen it, to clarify. And I'm hearing, I've heard some people say that they actually prefer it to the new Game of Thrones series, which I have been watching and have been really impressed with. So to the extent that that is true, or you know, even if they're kind of comparable, then I'm excited. But I will report back next week. I imagine a lot of our listeners might check out that first two episodes, actually, coming out Friday. So I'll be excited to check back in there.
Exciting. But that's not the only thing you're watching this week.
I know. That's, man.
Okay.
So today, tonight.
Oh, tonight.
We are going to see the Spider-Man No Way Home More Fun Stuff edition, which is, for those that don't know, the extended new theatrical release of Spider-Man No Way Home.
Interesting.
13 minutes of footage being added, which, on the one hand, I know sounds like not very much, but also, like, I don't know, like 13 minutes of new stuff in that movie sounds really exciting to me. And I get to go see it in theaters again. And apparently at least some of it is Andrew and Toby related. And I've heard rumblings about some additional Charlie Cox stuff. So,
Yeah,
I'm excited. And here's the thing. I know people are like, oh my gosh, is this going to be what, the fifth time you've seen this in theaters? And yes, it's either the fifth or the sixth. Who's counting? It's fine. But the thing is, Sony has this history of releasing these things and then not releasing them for home viewing. So for instance, with Far From Home, there was, and I totally missed this, I was probably in France when this happened, which is why I missed it, but they had an extended cut release similar to this, where they worked in that Peter's to-do list short into the narrative of the film, which is something that I've always wished they had done in the film itself, because I just feel like there's a little spot there. A lot of stuff from the trailers that I liked didn't show up and whatever. But they never released that actual cut in a way that you can officially watch. There are like fan-made cuts online. And so I have a feeling that, I mean, look, No Way Home is out and has been out, and maybe they're going to release an extended edition because Sony loves to get money out of Spider-Man, and that seems like a way to do it. But I don't know. You know, we live in crazy times. I can't bet on that. So I'm going to the theater tonight, and I'm excited about it. I've been counting down the days.
The big rumblings I've heard are that they maybe changed the post-credit scene. That's what I've heard, because it was just a trailer for Multiverse of Madness, if you remember. I would be totally on board with seeing a new scene. I'm not going to say what I read just in case it's correct and you want to see it. But yeah, they didn't really have much there besides that trailer. So have fun, dude. I want to hear about it. We'll have to get a review. We'll get a Robbie review when you get back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the question always comes up when this happens. Are these scenes canon now? When there's extended editions, are they canon? And you'll have to tell me how much that matters in the first place. But secondly, I'm kind of with you. I think it'd be fun almost to have the option of some of these extended versions on Disney Plus, so that if you like it and you're showing someone for the first time, you could show them that version.
Yeah.
And make it canon, I guess.
Yeah, I think what I wish is just that, at least to the extent that they're willing to put out these finished, polished, deleted scenes, which they do, I think I would be interested in versions of the movies that just at least incorporate those. And I'm not saying that that has to be the main version or that it has to get a formal release. But yeah, like if there was just an option on Disney Plus to watch kind of with or without those cut scenes, and you recognize that, you know, it's going to be maybe a little bit more, it could be a more bloated film or something, but it's also likely, you know, from the scenes that I've normally watched on like Marvel Blu-rays, we're dealing with a couple of minutes total anyway. But I just, because you hear certain things, you know, like there were some really interesting scenes that were cut from Black Widow that we talked about some, like the actual escape from Ross and, you know, her going back to where she had been raised when they were undercover, that I've heard a lot of people say they would have liked to have seen. And I don't know, I think that would kind of be an interesting thing. And some of that you might have to cut out existing scenes and whatever, but I could see Disney employing some editors for that purpose. We did find out this week that Disney employs someone for timeline keeping purposes. Did you see this?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So, good. You know,
they need to.
Yeah. The big thing that I'm still looking for that I don't know if Disney Plus will ever have any reason to do, but I have heard other people put this out there, would just be separated post-credit scenes. Like they would still be in the movie itself, but also put up separately in the same way that they have like the one shots put up, just because mm-hmm. that's one of those things. Whenever I'm telling people that are watching for the first time, you know, the order to go in, I'm always really nervous that they're just going to accidentally, even if I tell them, they're going to forget. And then, you know, if you watch like Black Widow, for instance, in our order, and then keep going to the post-credit scene, like my sister, who I've been talking about, has been going through. I watched it with her, did like a Disney Plus remote thing. And in part, it was because I wanted to make sure that I was there and paused it. Because if not, that's like a massive, you know, massive spoiler for later on. So stuff like that. And the fact that they're spending so much time on the timeline, have the chronological order up on the platform, like, I don't know. It doesn't seem crazy that they might
sure.
take that into account. But this is why, look, I mean, and if they're going to do that, hey. If they have to pay somebody to do it, Kyle. So, I mean.
You know what? That's a good point.
Just
you're overqualified.
Consider this my resume, Disney.
But you're already going to be writing for them, so. Do you want to be the timeline police or the writer? We got to figure out a lot of things out with you.
I know. Running out of time. Just too yeah. not enough hours in the day. But yeah, so that's anyway, a lot going on, a lot of fun stuff this week. Lots of did some fun lawyerly things this week, which is on theme with our current project. So just all around coming up aces.
I'm going to ask you about that when we get into She-Hulk. So today's episode is going to be a little bit different. I am going to put the timestamps of each of these discussions in the show notes because last week, Robbie and I teased a brief Daredevil discussion we wanted to have before he made an appearance in the show. And everyone freaked out online and said, oh my gosh, did Kyle just spoil that Daredevil is in the next episode? Well, now you know he wasn't, and I wasn't spoiling anything. However, Robbie and I over on Friends from... I guess, apparently. Over on Friends from Work Plus, Robbie and I have been going back through Daredevil Season 2, which has been really fun. So by the way, check out Friends from Work Plus. If you're not already subscribed, do that. But that's why we're in a Daredevil headspace right now, okay? So we were not trying to spoil anything. But it has brought up a few points we really want to make about Daredevil before he shows up. We want to be on the record before it happens, okay? So gather your children, bring everyone around, bring them in close. This is going to be a couple of old men sitting on a porch discussion here. Just we're going to give you a little TED talk here on the current status of Daredevil. Just a little message, a little infomercial for how we want the Friends from Work community to view Daredevil, okay? So that's going to be now. Then we're going to get into She-Hulk episode 2. Gather around. Here we go.
I'm excited.
You know, back in my day, here's the thing. I just know that the reaction to Daredevil showing up when he finally does is going to be so crazy. And there is going to be a huge portion, a sizable portion at least, of people that I fear are going to hate on it regardless of what they do. And I need to get that out there. And I implore our audience to embrace what they're going to give us with open arms. Okay? Let's have open minds about this. I'm not saying you have to love everything they're going to do, but oh my gosh, there's a little bit of a toxic fandom around Daredevil, Robbie, online. And
yeah,
wow, it's going to be explosive when he finally shows up. And so I just want to briefly talk about that ahead of time.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're getting to talk about this. And again, this is in connection more with what's going on Friends from Work Plus, and just the fact that, I mean, In part, I think the reason I was excited to talk about Daredevil today is because we are now three episodes into the show and he has not shown up. And it's funny how much the conversation for the last few weeks and the weeks leading up to the show was centered on this character that has yet to appear. And it's just, it's another one of those things where it's funny how like the Marvel Twitter news cycle works, where it's like there will be quote unquote controversies around things that don't even exist yet. Like there are controversies around somebody's prediction as to how something might turn out. And that's right. Just wild to me.
I'm nervous that he's going to show up and make a joke or two. And there's going to be a huge backlash of people being like, that's not what he's like. He doesn't make jokes. Daredevil's not funny. He's goofy. Disney's making everything too goofy. And right. It's just interesting in my current headspace because, like I said, we just went back and watched the beginning of season two of Daredevil. And there were things I actually missed about a non-Disney version of Daredevil. What? As blasphemous as that is to say. Like, there were a few things that Disney have done well with these characters. And I kind of hope they do bring to a character like Daredevil. Secondly, people that say that act like Daredevil never made a joke in the comics. And that's just not true either. And I don't know who gets to be the gatekeeper of all this.
I think that's the thing that really frustrates me here is there's like a very particular type of community on Twitter, some of which was, I think, really adeptly called out in today's She-Hulk episode, that just, it sees itself as this arbiter of truth when it comes to how comics characters should be portrayed. And one, that's just ridiculous because we're talking about made up characters out of comic books that have been written by dozens and dozens of people, not even counting adaptations. And two, I think what really drives me crazy is that this always comes from this place of totally unearned confidence from these people. Like you see them post something that winds up being totally either like a fake comic book panel often, or one that is taken out of context or not even canon or something to show what they think the actual character is. Like I see this stuff all the time in a way that other people probably don't because they don't care enough to read into it like I do. But it's like, then you get the like, oh, look how they massacred my boy memes that I know we're going to see a ton of whenever we get, any kind of shot of him smiling or in the yellow suit, which again, obviously, is from the first issue of Daredevil. Like, so many of the things people are talking about here, it's hilarious because what people are afraid Marvel is going to do to Daredevil is what Stan Lee made Daredevil as. Like, yes, I get that Frank Miller reinvented Daredevil, and I've already talked about that in the past on the show, how even that run is painted in retrospect as a lot darker than it actually was. Like, if you read through there, Frank Miller has Daredevil kind of being debonair and cracking jokes and being a little bit more of a lighthearted character when it feels fitting. But again, like, that, yes, that is one writer's very iconic and, arguably definitive take on the character. But the person that invented him or co-invented him, Stan Lee is not known as a guy that wrote particularly dark, gritty characters. And he wrote Daredevil for a while. And so you're going to get a version of that character that is actually in some ways, but I don't even know that we're going to get that version of the character. But I'm saying if we did get a lighthearted version, then arguably that's truer to the original character, if we want to get all in the weeds here, than the
which
the
we don't,
Netflix
by the
version.
Way. That's the whole point.
You know?
It's wild.
It's just that it's one thing, and again, I still think it's dumb because we're just dealing with fiction here anyway, but it's one thing if you were mad because it's like, oh, they're making a Captain America movie and he doesn't even have a shield or something. And it's like, you know what? I get it. Like, that's something that's pretty much a core part of the character from the comics, and they're taking that out, and I understand your frustration. I think what's annoying to me is that those people either just don't even know what the comics say or have just decided that they're own version of what the comics say is all that matters. And I guess my thing is just, if you're going to be like belligerently insistent on how something should be portrayed, like at least be right. Like at least have your facts straight before you like come out and start like attacking everybody else. It's just like, man, again, it's why I feel like this episode of She-Hulk and some of the commentary there makes this conversation so timely.
You know, I think when you grow up with these characters, they become so personal to you. So it feels like you've spent so much time with them, and it's offensive when somebody comes along that's making a new iteration of that character and you feel like they haven't spent as much time as you on it. So then it feels like you have the ownership over it. And I get that. So I'm not saying that, you know, no matter how Daredevil shows up, you have to love it. He could show up
sure.
in just a Speedo, like walking on his hands, being like, oh, and I would probably be like, hey, that's not really a great version of this character. You know, how do you like that?
I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued now.
Well, you know, he's acrobatic, right?
I hope Disney's still listening from that earlier part of the episode and taking notes.
But I do know there is going to be a faction. People that are going to be against it no matter what they do. And I just don't think that's fair either. You know, we just watched the first episode of season two, and it kicks off the entire season with Matthew and Foggy joking about dancing and the dates. And like, even that version of the show had some effort of being lighthearted, especially when he's Matthew over Daredevil, right? So if Matthew has some jokes, that's totally already in line with the Netflix show. So let's not freak out about that, first of all. Mm-hmm. Second of all, there is a little bit of a lack of chemistry amongst the characters when they're not in the superhero versions of themselves at times in that show. So if they work to improve that by making a little bit better dialogue when they're Matthew and Foggy and Karen and those people,
yeah,
then I think that's a good thing. Let's embrace that, because that is a little bit lacking from that series. I guess I hope that they are able to do that stuff while still bringing in some of the edge he has, some of the cool camera work that show had in the fighting styles mm-hmm. and things like that. And I think Kevin was a fan of what they did on that series. So I don't think it's going to come way out of left field, you know? Like, I think they will continue some of that stuff while hopefully adding some of the joy that Disney brings to this stuff. So end of rant. I just ask that before he shows up, we all approach it with open minds. That's all.
And I do think that on that question, which we'll undoubtedly get into when Matt Murdock shows up in the show, but I think that I predict, and this is not something that I know at all, or I wouldn't say it, but I predict that they're going to find a way to thread that needle and make it feel as though we have that existing continuity for those that want it without forcing people that are into a show like She-Hulk to also be into a show like Daredevil, which, as we've talked about over on Friends from Work Plus, is considerably darker and more violent. So I think that it's going to be this big debate that ultimately I could see Marvel finding ways to settle such that most folks are happy. I also predict, by the way, that we will get some kind of fourth wall reference from Jen about that in the same way that we did with Bruce and the Ed Norton, Mark Ruffalo swap.
I can't wait. I'm so excited to actually see it happen. So that's going to be so much fun.
I love the way the suit looks too, from the stills we've gotten. I think it looks cool.
Yeah. You're more the suit guy, so I'm going to take your word for it. I'll consult you about it, but I can't wait.
Yeah.
I mean, the way Matthew showed up in No Way Home was so fulfilling and cool, right? Like, that was perfect, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they keep a similar vibe. That didn't feel out of place. That felt like Matthew from the show.
Agreed. Yeah.
All right. So let's get into She-Hulk. Today's coverage of She-Hulk is brought to you by our friends at Epic Hero Shop. Robbie, I am on day three of wearing my Epic Hero Shop gear. I had a Miss Marvel shirt that's brand new. It's dope, like the purple lightning bolt. And then I have my classic TVA shirt. And then today, my superhero law shirt from Epic Hero Shop, all of which I love, fit comfortably, look dope. And so check out epicheroshop.com.
Nice. I got a massive shipment of Epic Hero Shop stuff. I think one from a ways back from Thor Love and Thunder had gotten held up. And so I got like all these shirts in and was so stoked. They all look great. And so I'm going to start getting some photos out online so people can see. But this great Gore the God Butcher shirt, a She-Hulk shirt. Yeah. And then the we actually got the who the hell is this guy? Peter Parker shirt,
which I saw. I've been really excited got that. About.
So, man, yeah, they're killing it.
Wear
right
that
now.
Tonight.
Oh, I should.
Yeah.
Hopefully, nobody's going there. That's that hasn't seen it at this point.
That's true. It's a spoiler. You're a walking spoiler. Use the promo code Friends from Work if it's your first purchase at EpicHeroShop.com. Robbie, She-Hulk, episode 3.
She-Hulk episode 3 is entitled The People versus Emil Blonsky. This one was directed again by Kat Coiro, who has now directed the first 3 episodes and will also direct next week's before taking the next 3 off. This one is the first from a new set of writers. The last 2 were written by Jessica Gao, the showrunner. This was written by Francesca Gales, I think I'm saying that right, and Jacqueline J. Gales. Very happy with their writing on this, as we'll talk about soon. And I don't know if we've talked a ton about it, but the music here is, again, from Amy Doherty, an Irish composer that I was not familiar with prior to this. The cast here is, again, largely the same. Tatiana Maslany, obviously. We do not have Mark Ruffalo here for the first time, but we do have an expanded role for Tim Roth as Emil Blonsky, and, of course, Benedict Wong as Wong. Also, brief appearances from Renee Elise Goldsberry, who will undoubtedly have a larger role later on in this series, from Josh Segarra as Augustus Pug Pugliese, and from Ginger Gonzaga as Nikki Ramos. And of course, we also got a brief look at Megan Thee Stallion, both in the episode and in final credit scene. Oh, and sorry, lest I forget, Peg O'Keefe here, portraying Runa, a shape-shifting light elf from New Asgard. That is the bulk of our cast and crew, so let's get into She-Hulk episode 3.
So I feel like this show is starting to really settle in into what the mm-hmm. vibe is. We have gotten a handful or less, not very many, messages of people that have a very visceral response against this show, like really dislike it.
Oh, interesting.
There have been a few, maybe a handful or more, maybe 5 to 10 people on record that are just kind of indifferent. Like they don't think it's bad, but the humor just doesn't really work for them and they're not fully invested in the characters. They want to know why Jen wants to be a lawyer. Why is she working this hard at it? What drives her? Ironically, a couple people messaged comparing the scene in Daredevil where he's talking to Punisher on the roof to Jen and how that gives you Daredevil's why. And I haven't had that moment with Jen. But then I think overall, I would say the vast majority, maybe 80% of people are really, really enjoying this show.
Yeah.
And I'm in that camp. I understand that this is not reinventing the wheel. It's a 27-minute comedy, but I just really enjoy it. So to the people that really dislike it, I don't even really have a massive pushback other than I just disagree. I have fun with it. I don't have some revolutionary thing to tell you. I just like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I would argue it is doing some new things, at least for Marvel. But I think also just in terms of what's on television right now, it's got a unique tone. Even like looking at the difference between this and those early episodes of Ms. Marvel that we liked so much, I thought Ms. Marvel was doing something really, really well in tone that I thought other folks have been doing well. And I referenced like the vibe of like Never Have I Ever or Turning Red, or I think you could even look at like Love, Simon or Heartstopper. But I think that it was a YA vibe that they were doing really well. I'm not talking about the thing that Ms. Marvel did that was really unique was more substantively in terms of the way that it was encompassing like the Pakistani culture and this idea of a family as it related to Kamala. Here, though, I think tonally, this is kind of a unique thing, and I could see why people wouldn't like it. And I'm with you. It's not the kind of thing that I'm going to die on the hill for. But like, I think the meta stuff is unique for this kind of show, and I think it's done in a way that really works for me.
Meta in a way you're referencing Marvel meta, or meta in culture, or both?
Kind of both, actually.
I thought the way they were meta with the female commentary is where the show's at its best.
Yeah.
Like the Twitter comments, those totally are real comments that I read.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wrote down some of those, like they took the Hulk's manhood away and gave it to a woman.
I know. It's then, so good.
I mean, some of them like are just straight quotes that I've seen online where it's like, I'm fine with female superheroes, but can't they just get their own character?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's literally exactly what I read online.
Yeah. It's can't they just be creative? And I thought that was really, really well done. But as we're getting into it, since this is all the start, I did briefly want to give a little overview here just to kind of add some context. Then I was thinking we could hit our high points.
Yeah.
Okay. So by way of catch up, again, maybe you're listening to this a couple days after you watch the episode. We open this episode with Jen dealing with the backlash of that footage that was released about Blonsky escaping. So she goes to the facility and interviews him and finds out that, according to him, he was actually removed from his cell by Wong, which we kind of know because of Shang-Chi. So she then tries to get in touch with Wong. We have a very funny scene there about his LinkedIn page. And meanwhile, while she's doing this and trying to talk to Wong, her former colleague, Dennis Bukowski, the guy that is always making the really terrible remarks, is filing suit and employing Jen's firm because he has been defrauded by a shape-shifting light elf from New Asgard who was impersonating Megan Thee Stallion. He refuses to hire Jen because he says that they have too much history. And so he hires her coworker, Augustus Pug Pugliese, or Isi. And so we then have the kind of parallel storylines of that proceeding where they're suing this light elf and Jen is trying to get Blonsky off parole. Ultimately, they're able to win both proceedings because Jen's able to get Wong to testify that he took Blonsky out of the cell, but that Blonsky had the choice to come back in. We also see Blonsky turn into Abomination and show that he has now control over himself in that form. Meanwhile, Jen also testifies at the trial in what was one of the funnier scenes of this show to me so far, that Dennis is actually so delusional and so pathologically entitled that he would have, in fact, thought that he was dating the real Megan Thee Stallion, and therefore that it was reasonable that he would have been defrauded. Finally, the episode ends with Jen being attacked by the Wrecking Crew, which we'll talk about here in a second, that is attempting to steal a sample of her blood. And that is the introduction, finally, of what I think may be our series, Big Bad. And that's what happened this week.
So, quick sexism commentary check-in. We brought this up in the first episode. See, this is what I meant by the commentary is a lot more overt here in the later episodes, more than it is in the beginning. But ironically, I think what you said is also true, where even though it is more overt, it's making it so overt that it's clearly making Dennis like a character of himself, and therefore it is kind of funnier.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially here.
When you talked about how, like, you wish it would either be more subtle, so the people that really felt that way felt uncomfortable and had to wrestle with that, or it would be funny, it seems like they went the direction of just make it so ridiculous that it is funny, and I think it's working.
Yep, exactly. Like, and that's what I remember thinking. Like, I remember texting you after seeing the first two episodes, and that was my immediate reaction was like, I just don't really understand what they're doing with this character because I'm not laughing and it's just sort of ridiculous. But then I remember thinking, well, okay, but there is some payoff in episode three. And I actually just really like the way that the writers here write the character. I thought this was my favorite writing of the show so far, particularly like those Twitter comments, but also his lines, Jen's lines in court and at the prison. Like, it's like they have that kind of sharp, incisive approach that I think I was craving when it came here, because they managed to actually make it over the top and funny and still effective, because yes, he's so ridiculous. And then they get you to think like, wow, what a ridiculous character. But then the way that Jen ultimately characterizes him is, it works such that you can be like, oh, wow. I mean, that is sort of a certain, like, there is this level of entitledness, especially like within that world and the way that he responds to working on the case with her, like where I think they did something really tricky here that I'm not sure was managed in those first two episodes.
Totally. So here's my commentary for today. I have 9 small things, just totally small notes that I enjoyed. And then I have 2 bigger-ish questions towards the end, one about plot and one to you, okay?
Okay, perfect.
That's my setup. So first of all, to me, this episode was a little bit funnier even. I laughed right away with the introduction to Wong. Like, I think Tim Roth is funny and how he's delivering all this stuff, and then how it led right into Nikki bringing up Wong and the thirst trap comment was really funny. Right. That she's like, he's either a librarian here or he's a sorcerer supreme, which is funny because he's both of those things. Right. She's like, don't worry, I just set up a thirst trap. It's me with a bunch of books. That made me laugh.
Well, and I just like that. His internet presence is a little chaotic.
Yeah, it's so good. And then we talked about this briefly. I liked the commentary towards women and the meta commentary there with the social media stuff, which we won't get into that again. But the last comment, the kid saying, you know, I'd smash when they're talking about the Hulk.
Yeah.
Like, horrible. Shouldn't say that, but funny.
Yeah. While we're talking about funny writing here, I laughed out loud whenever Runa is impersonating Pug in the law firm, and he walks by all the women. Yep. And it's like, the exact line was, I love harassing women in the workplace. It's my kick.
See, that's like, what I mean there, right? Right? Like, make it so blatant that it's funny. Like, no one actually does that.
And it's great because he's, like you said last episode, been introduced as such an anti-that. And then him coming out and he's like, it's not true. You know that. You know me. It's not true.
Oh, could I laugh so hard at that part? You know that's not true. How about Runa, the shape-shifting elf, delivering the, sir, Asgard is not a place. Yes. It's a people. And she like, did you hear like it starts playing like Thor music in the background, which is genius. And it's like this big moment. And he's like, okay, that's Thor's motivational speeches will not be admissible in court, which is perfect. Just coming off the Love and Thunder vibe too. I don't know. Yeah. I think it's really funny.
One thing that I think this show can do that I appreciate, and I could see it turning some people off, is, you know, for the longest time, and maybe this is me being hypocritical, for the longest time, I would always ask in a show like Falcon Winter Soldier or Far From Home, right? Like, how much do people know? Like, how much do they know about what the Avengers have done regarding Thanos, but just in general? Like, what is common knowledge in this universe? And I think that in a show like Falcon Winter Soldier, I want them to be pretty fastidious about the way that they delve into that stuff. Like, I want them to actually kind of respect the canon and like, well, how would somebody know this? But here, like, one, if you want to think through it, I'm sure there's maybe a way that this judge is aware of the Asgard is a people, not a place line. But I'm also just kind of okay with them not having to give us any rationale for that. Like, I feel like this show is, that's what I was saying earlier with the kind of meta commentary, meta in the way we were talking about with like them taking aim at Marvel film Twitter combos, but also meta within the MCU. Like, because it makes for fun jokes, and I think that the tone and genre of the show, it means that's fine. Like, that's enough. And I could see like that totally being one of those examples of something that some people would just be really turned off by, because for so long the MCU has been so tight with that kind of thing.
Totally.
So I think it's just how you respond to that.
We get Wong again, the phase of Wong, the phase of the dinner scene and the phase of Wong. That's what we should call
phase four.
But fun to see Wong again. We get a No Way Home reference with the memory comments.
Yes.
Again, another Easter
Not
egg.
Not only unethical, but also just very messy.
Yeah, which is so good.
By the way,
a couple people... Are we going to say the same thing?
Oh, that's funny.
Are we about to say the same thing?
No, I don't think so. Mine's not an actual comment, so you should go first.
Oh, a couple people have commented that Wong felt a little out of character. I don't think so. I don't think so. I disagree. I think that Wong, if you go back to Multiverse of Madness, he does have some jokes, some quips. Like, maybe when we first were introduced to him, it was weird, but that was the whole point, is he laughs at the end of Doctor Strange, right?
Right.
This did not feel out of place to say, well, also messy.
Even Infinity War, I think that the whole, really the only conversations that we get with Wong are kind of him being funny.
We also see him in Shang-Chi partnering with Abomination for these fights. So he's clearly got other parts of his life, right?
Right. Yeah, it's funny. I see where they're coming from. And again, I think that kind of plays to the comment I just made. But I had written down, I think Wong is just this fascinating case study. And I'm not quite sure what to make of it yet. I don't know if it's just Benedict Wong being such a compelling actor. That's definitely a huge part of it. But historically, I've always been really wary of franchises taking a character that had a limited role that worked really well and then milking that to death until what you initially loved about the character is totally gone. Like, it's lost all of its charm. Because it was like, you know, I think often it's a less is more thing with those sorts of folks. And wow, that has just not been the case for me with Wong. Every time he shows up, and like you said, it feels like he's showing up a ton, it works. And it works in different ways. And yeah, he does kind of have slightly different incarnations here and there. But I thought he was fantastic in this episode. Like, legitimately just a great comedic presence.
Yeah, that'll be fascinating to track. I wonder if it's partially because he was never as much of a side character as maybe Trevor Slattery was. Maybe that's why it works a little bit better here. Maybe it is just Benedict playing it so well, but we also like Ben Kingsley's performance too. So it's not just that.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, but I like it here.
What's especially interesting is that's just one of the examples of a character that has such a different presence than he has in the comics working so well, you know, and Marvel's done that a couple of times in notable ways, but this one is like, I mean, even in our Comics Corner episode, when we were reading some of Jason Aaron's Doctor Strange, like, Wong in the books is primarily like a servant to Doctor Strange. Like, he is there as like support staff and in a similar way to like Jarvis in the comics. And I love that the MCU has just totally gone in a new direction with that character and expanded what he can do and expanded the scope of his personality, and that it's paid off so well.
I think there's a part of you when watching this that likes to always kind of think of Doctor Strange and Wong specifically being in the background, like always on watch, like always meditating, being all powerful, all knowing. And it's easy just to kind of compartmentalize that, like, oh, that's what Doctor Strange is doing. He's in his sanctum just watching over the universe. And I think it can be a little bit jarring when you actually see that, oh, they have lives. Like Wong maybe need to make a buck battling Abomination.
Right.
And like they are walking to get a sandwich at the deli. Remember in Infinity War? And it's kind of like, oh, like they have other things they have to do still. And they have personalities and jokes and like flaws. That's kind of weird because I always just picture them levitating in their sanctum.
Well, and that's, by the way, that's one of the things I loved so much about Multiverse of Madness is that we got that aspect of Steven, where it's like ever since Doctor Strange, the movie, we had really only seen him being this kind of noble guardian. So I liked seeing that he still does have a personal life and things that are pulling at him.
They're definitely humanizing them both, no doubt.
Yep.
So Megan Thee Stallion showing up is funny, right?
Anika
and I laughed really hard at the actual post-credit scene. Uh-huh. Not the fact that they were dancing so much, but just when she goes, I would kill for you. And she goes, okay, dial it back. That made us laugh pretty hard. Like, okay, easy.
Dude, I mean, the writing was so funny to me all episode, but also Maslany's performance, the way she's delivering some of those lines was so funny. Like the way she says that I will kill for you, Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah. And then she's like, whoa, dial it back. And then I think Tim Roth is at his funniest here. He was funny in the first two episodes, but I never fully bought the pen pal thing. It was funny, but like, I don't know. Actually hearing him name each person made me laugh out loud as he's like going down the line, how ridiculous it is. And then when he says, they're my other perfect eighths, made me laugh.
My better eighths.
My better eighths, yeah, sorry. I need to look up some of the names too because they're perfect. And then one of the last lines that made me laugh, a high point for me, that will lead into my question to you, is when She-Hulk says, what did you guys rob an Asgardian construction worker? And they're like, yep, yeah, we did. I thought that was pretty funny. But this is the first look at somebody trying to steal her blood to recreate this serum and a hint at the boss won't like that. So is this the first look at where this could be going villain-wise?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, I think that the Wrecking Crew will probably show up again. I don't think that they themselves, you know, are the ultimate villain, but they're clearly working for someone. And I'm...
What is the Wrecking Crew?
Yeah, so this is fun. The Wrecking Crew is a classic bunch of Thor villains, I think created by Lynn Wine and Sal Buscema. So not quite back in the early 60s, but kind of 70s era. And it's a perfect shout out here because they do have they have these enchanted weapons that kind of give them like Asgardian powers. We've gotten sort of different versions of what the enchantments are. They weren't initially introduced as Thor villains, but I think as they've become more associated with him, they've also become more associated with kind of Asgardian magic. And so that's what made that line both funny in just on its own, but also funny kind of again on the meta level. And like I said, this may be another thing that since these are kind of classic villains, some people could be upset in the way that they're portrayed. I feel like this is the perfect way of doing this, sort of on par with the way Winter Soldier handled Batroc, where it's like you're sort of giving these characters their due, but also recognizing that they're just kind of fundamentally ridiculous and they're not going to ever be taken as threats in the same way that like Thanos is.
Do you have any speculation?
Warning.
Who could be behind this? Or you have no idea?
I have an idea now.
But you don't want to say it, maybe.
Well, so, yeah, okay. This is not at all informed by anything else that we've seen. As a reminder, we've only seen one more episode after this, so we're almost on the same page with everybody again. But so I think if I had to guess right now, we might be looking at something involving Samuel Stearns, aka the leader, who we met in The Incredible Hulk, along with Emil Blonsky. He's the one that actually transforms Blonsky into Abomination at the very end, and we kind of famously got that moment of him having his blood mix in with Bruce's, and that he had all these vials of Bruce's blood that I think in the movie Banner says to incinerate, but I don't know if we see it being incinerated. But there is the weird focus on, like, in the early part of She-Hulk, like, I felt like it was very intentional showing Bruce destroying that sample. And then we're now seeing someone trying to get another one. And we know that, like, the one person that's associated with Bruce's blood historically within the MCU was Stearns. And the leader is arguably the biggest Hulk villain, aside from, like, General Ross and the U.S. military. So that's kind of my – I think if I had to guess, I would say that. Also, I just think Tim Blake Nelson is such a great asset to the MCU that I would hate to see them never return to that. Like, in the same way I was happy to have Tim Roth show back up. Man, The Incredible Hulk, the cast is kind of insane in retrospect.
Greg will be happy to know that I am going to include The Incredible Hulk on my rewatch journey. So I'm hopefully going to get there in the next few weeks. Everyone can just calm down about it.
Nice.
And I am excited to see it again because I don't remember a ton about it. Now, obviously, seeing Abomination again and whatnot, I need to get caught up. So excited about that. My last question for you before we rank this thing, I kind of want to do like a Robbie's Law segment on these episodes. How do you feel like the law stuff worked with real life law / can you give us any insight into what real life law is like? And you took your first real witness, right? In real life.
Yeah. So yeah, I took a deposition 2 days ago, which was,
congratulations. Which was
nice. Yeah. Hey, thanks. Yeah. Just, you know, I just channeled all my, friends from work interviewing powers, but yeah, I've really enjoyed that aspect of the show, and it's channeled a lot. Like, we've talked about the Dan Slott stuff, which I still think is the primary inspiration for this, but the creators have also cited to the Charles Soule run. And like I said before, what I like about him writing characters like She-Hulk and Daredevil is that he does try to put in his own kind of law, not just his law degree, but also his background at bigger law firms in there. And so if we're going to read some of that run for our second Comics Corner for She-Hulk, and even just the opening issue, you see a lot of, I mean, they're talking about the amount of billable hours and the requirements there and how that works and bringing in business. And it's all these things that when you work at a law firm, that's just what's being discussed every day. I do like that idea. Like, I guess what I'm saying is I think that they're doing the legal stuff pretty well, you know, for this kind of a show, at least from my perspective. But I think what's more fun is the legal culture that they're capturing, like within the big law firm and the different kind of characters that you have and the way that the managing partners tend to act. And like, that's all been really fun for me so far. And I do respect, like, I think that was one of the things that turned me off in that initial episode was like, man, I just don't think this is how – I don't think they're doing anything effective here But I think as soon as they got Jin to the firm and out of the DA's office is when they started really getting a chance to do some interesting stuff. And it makes me think that they, whether it's Charles Soule himself, who I think was maybe a consultant in some part, or, you know, some of these other writers, they definitely have someone in the room that is giving them some kind of big law culture background. So for those viewers like me, I think that's a fun element.
Love it. Oh, we're in Daredevil world. We're in She-Hulk world. You're just loving life right now. You feel so seen. So seen.
I do. Oh, hey, before we grade these things, I saw there was one more note here that I forgot to bring up that I was going to ask you about. You just asked me about the Wrecking Crew and my speculation. So one thing that I think is interesting and I like, I mean, this sort of mirrors some stuff in the comics as well. We got that line from Dennis here about, you know, I hate she's going to be able to do this again. I wish someone could do something to make it so she couldn't use her powers. And then, you know, Jin presumably then takes that as a proposal to the parole board, and Blonsky winds up not only being forbidden from turning into Abomination, but also has this inhibitor. I was going to ask you, do you think that has anything to do with like Bruce's tech that he was talking about? Or do you think that there's some sort of inhibitor? You know, I think we saw this in Ms. Marvel, but we also saw in Civil War, like, you know, Wanda has that thing on her neck that I think is supposed to keep her from using her powers. I think if you really delved into this, it would be, I can't imagine what possible technology would do that. But I was going to ask you, like, what you think these inhibitors are and where they're coming from, and if you think that they're going to maybe show up later in the series.
It's from Bruno's iPad, that app he's got.
Oh, that he makes sense. He knows how to
just, yeah.
He's just order those from Prime.
Yeah, I don't know. We've seen it there. Obviously, Bruce brings up his own inhibitor on his arm, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, that kept him from turning into the Hulk. So is it one of those? And yeah, who is making it?
Yeah. I mean, that seems
here's what my gut tells me. It's not something bigger than a passing comment for them to be like, hey, the US government came up with this. It's a solution for getting rid of super powered individuals without killing them. That's what I think they're doing. And it's just going to be a small comment. However, is it a comment that eventually we'll look back on as like a cool Easter egg, right? Like,
right.
Does eventually that come into play with the mutant gene in X-Men? Or like long time down the road, does it come into play with Norman Osborn or the Baxter Building discovered this tech or built this tech? And we'll look back and be like, oh, that was the first Easter egg of it. I don't know. I think it's something small, but yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they led to something bigger there.
I think you're probably right. I mean, I could maybe see a situation in this show where, you know, just as Jin is becoming comfortable with being She-Hulk, she winds up being, you know, somehow imprisoned as Jin, and she can't use her powers. I mean, I think there was a little foreshadowing in this episode. Like, I think it's interesting that in this episode they included both the inhibitor and the line about, yeah, once she turned into Hulk, I couldn't break her gross green skin, where, like, I do think that what's going to happen is they're going to try to figure out a way to get her when she is Jin, which could maybe involve like inhibiting her. But otherwise, I don't see any, I don't think it'll go further than that here. But the reason I ask is because it does seem like what a perfect thing for a company like Oscorp or Roxxon to be creating as we do maybe look towards some sort of like Dark Avengers Thunderbolts thing, you know, where it's like that would give them control over those villains when they need to, but then kind of allow them to justify using them as heroes. I don't know.
Can I ask you one other totally random question and then we'll rank this thing?
Yeah.
Is Miles Morales inherently tied to Roxxon, or is that just a story that the game chose to do?
That's just the story from the game.
Okay. So like, just because you see Roxxon doesn't mean Miles is around.
No, I personally associate Roxxon more with Thor just because of how much it played into Jason Aaron's run.
Interesting. Okay.
And that may be why they, you know, it got the shout out in Loki. Well,
yeah, as I say, we saw it in Loki. Yep.
But I, you know, I think that we're going to get more of that. Like, there's just a, there's a hole. Yep. In my
there's,
opinion,
there's going to be a political organization that rises. Something. It's going to be, like you said, Oscorp or something. Roxxon. Yeah, it's gonna happen.
And I just feel like that they have some I think Oscorp, like that would require, as people have kind of said ad nauseum, a permission from Sony, and you know that they would really have to figure out some sort of long term Spider-Man deal. But if they don't want to do that, they have Roxxon. And also, I think what would make me even happier is they have Hammer Industries potentially. If they wanted to figure out a way to bring Sam Rockwell back, and what a perfect, I mean, you know, the person that was so bitter against Tony Stark, you know, if he was the one that could now come back in and sort of stick it to the Avengers, that would make sense.
Yep. And it'd be amazing, by the way.
It'd be Sam Rockwell. He would work so well in this era too, right? Like as I feel, or especially like in a show like this. I don't think he's going to show up in She-Hulk, but like, yeah.
He's got my kind of humor.
Yeah.
You know?
All right. So before we give our grades, our episode ranking this week is brought to you by Squarespace. As you know, we are huge fans of Squarespace. We use it for our own website. Kyle and I have both used it in the past for our individual websites, and there are just so many tools and resources there that work so well. If you need a website, if you're thinking about creating one, there is no better place to go than Squarespace. And remember, while you're there, use promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. All right, Kyle, I think I went first last week, so I'm going to make you go first this week. So give us your grade for She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, Episode 3.
Okay. I was really not looking forward to grading this episode for some reason. When I first watched it on the screeners, which now was, 5 weeks ago, literally, I remember kind of feeling like each episode took a tiny step down for me. Then you and I talked, and you said it was the exact opposite, that every episode actually kind of went up for you, which is kind of interesting. And I watched it today and just really enjoyed it. I don't have a strong take on this. So today's ranking is the least sure I've been in a long time. It is not a hill I'll die on, but I'm going to give this a let's go plus.
Wow. Okay. Very fair. I'm going to give this one a let's freaking go.
Let's go.
Yeah. My experience is holding up. Now I will say I enjoyed the first two episodes. Well, I've enjoyed all three more than I did when I was watching the screeners. But yeah, I have felt, and I think my rankings reflect this so far, that it's bumped up every week. I think last week I gave it a let's freaking go, but I was sort of in my mind viewing that on the bottom end of that, and this is sort of on the higher end, but they're obviously the same grade. Like I said, this is when, you know, with the second episode behind us and then kind of seeing how this one starts with, okay, here are like these two cases, like she's now dealing with this side of the Blonsky thing. And then we also see the side of the thing with Dennis. And like, it's when I'm like, okay, I really like what the show is because we're getting that like comic book feeling thing. Like you and I talked about this on that Daredevil episode, which if you're curious about after all this conversation, you can find on Friends from Work Plus, about how it would be kind of fun to have more just like, you know, little mini arcs in series instead of it always having to be one building thing. And I really like that we've gotten that. I'm also intrigued, you know, that we're getting a look at something bigger here for the first time involving Jen. We've got some bigger stuff involving Bruce that may or may not pay off in this actual series. So I would say, when it comes to this episode and the way that it's making me view the series as a whole till now, I just really couldn't be happier. The one thing that I'm, you know, putting up my antenna for is what this build to the mystery villain looks like, because I think historically, arguably, that's where some of these series have faltered a bit. is, you know, in the pacing of a reveal like that, the way that the reveal itself is done, the weight it's given or not given.
Will they be clandestines?
Will they?
Who knows?
Oh, man. Yeah. And in fairness, I remember the week before, you know, one of those episodes that we were super down on for Miss Marvel, I remember saying, I'm loving the show, but, you know, who knows? We'll see what happens. And
if they try to do a massive build to a massive villain, and then that villain just feels like totally out of left field, or the tone of the show changes, mm-hmm. like if all of a sudden this show starts becoming like super serious, I think that'll be a loss, a net L to me.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. I think looking at how it's going now, and just looking at some of the writers that they have lined up, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either.
One of the later episodes, we have Zeb Wells coming in to write an episode on his own, who is currently writing the Amazing Spider-Man comic that I've been super up on. But he's historically a comedy writer, or at least, you know, leans on the more humorous side. So yeah, I'm with you. I think that that's going to be the tricky thing there is, like, you know, like in WandaVision, for instance, it worked because a lot of the comedy in that show was based around the sitcominess. And so there's this really kind of harrowing moment when you're pulled out of that finally, and you sort of realize what's going on, and she's in the basement, and it's like you now understand, like, that this has all been sort of a fake bubble and we're back into this darker real world. I don't think you can do that here. I think it's a different, like, the humor is too baked into totally. The core of the show. So yeah, I think the way they do a villain is going to be really interesting to watch.
All right, so my last few reminders here. Don't forget, we have Friends from Work Plus going right now on Patreon or on Apple subscriptions. We put out some Daredevil content on there. Robbie's going to be doing some more She-Hulk Comics Corner stuff. And we're introducing a new type of episode, which is just, hey, here are some other things that Robbie and Kyle are into right now. Could be totally unrelated to film, but just a few other things we like. So that'll be kind of fun. Check out Friends from Work Plus by going to the ffwpodcast.com and clicking on Join Friends from Work Plus, or, like I said, Apple Podcasts subscriptions. Also, don't forget, with Thor Love and Thunder releasing on Disney Plus on September 8th, which is coming up really soon, if you haven't seen that film, you'll finally have a chance to watch it on Disney Plus. And in honor of that, share a picture of you wearing your brand new Friends from Work t-shirt. I still have 10 of those left or so. If your size, tank, or t-shirt is on the website, please buy it and I'll send it to you. And we can all celebrate Thor on Disney Plus together. Reminder, I'm giving out a free original Friends from Work t-shirt by answering my trivia question, what follows the code statement, wonderful weather we're having this morning? If you can answer that without cheating, message me. The first person will get a classic Friends from Work t-shirt. And as always, thank you so much for listening. This has been so much fun. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And we would be eternally grateful. We are eternally grateful. Thank you so much. We love you all, and we'll see you next week talking She-Hulk Episode 4, the last one we've seen ahead of time, here on Friends from Work.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.